Welcome back, everybody. This is episode 16 of Pod on the Parish. We're super excited. We've done a lot of pods now. This is a big one. This is a very big one. We've got over 630 registrations signed up for this webinar. Our star guests have attracted all these people. So we've got Lance here and Claire here. How are you doing, guys?
Yeah, hi.
Good, thank you.
Where are you guys zooming in from?
I'm based on the Welsh border, just outside Chepstow, actually in Gloucestershire. My home. I am in my home today.
Good, good. And Claire?
Yeah, I'm also at home today. I'm in a very sunny but rather windy Kent, just outside Tunbridge Wells.
Lovely, jubbly. It's a bit painful. We're doing a webinar on a Monday morning. We never do this, and it's such a massive audience. Are you guys fully ready for it?
Yes, we are, of course. Yes,
well yes, prepared. Yes,
with enthusiasm. and we've been practicing at one or two locations around the country recently.
Yeah, you're seasoned professionals. But Claire, you kind of mentioned something a little bit off air. You're not so well prepared. What were you doing last night?
We had an impromptu barbecue with friends round, which resulted in me jumping in the swimming pool fully clothed at about 10 o'clock last night.
So, you had a few wines?
Possibly.
Okay, good. Sounds good fun. So going from jumping in pools to talking about digital agar today. But anyway, you guys, please introduce yourself. Starting with you, Lance.
Hi, yeah. I've just noticed that my name at the bottom says I'm SLCC president. Well, I am SLCC president, but I'm not here as that today. I'm wearing my other hat today. I am the user acceptance and training project manager for SAAA, smaller authorities audit appointments. And my job is to tell everybody about the new digital agar portal that's going to be available for everybody next year.
Awesome. Yeah, SAAA. Everyone knows SAAA, but no one knows what the acronym normally means. They try. But you worded it off there. Claire, tell me about that.
So I'm going to give you some more acronyms now. So my name's Claire Reed. I work at NALC, so National Association of Local Councils, and I'm a project manager. And I'm responsible for the rewrite of the proper practices. And they are being looked after, if you like, by SAP, which is a Smaller Authorities Proper Practices Panel. And I work alongside Lance and others at SAAA as well.
Cool. Yes, well, you guys are well known on the circuit. Whenever I'm out and about going to conferences, branch meetings, ALCC meetings, normally see you there. And actually, yeah, you guys are on the road a lot. How many trips do you normally do? How many have you done this year? Do you know?
I don't know. I think Lance has probably done more than me, but I probably do 1 to 2 a month, usually.
I cover off my SAAA stuff when I'm doing my presidential tour, and I think I'm up to about 20 odd branch meetings so far, plus regional conferences and other things.
So do you normally, are you driving, training, busing,
cycling? I'm on the train most of the time. I am going to Lincolnshire this evening for a meeting of the Lincolnshire County Association tomorrow at the Lincoln Showground. And then on Thursday, I'm in Carmarthenshire for the West Wales branch.
Awesome. Yeah, I've seen you. Yeah, we've bumped in a few times. Yeah, and you're a great speaker. So really, both of you have seen you speak. So it's really good to have you on today. So we all know you about your topic and everything like that. And when you're at these events, you kind of talk about like the sector. But is there something about you that not many people know when they meet you? Is there something you could share? I'm going to start with you, Claire.
Oh, gosh. So I was discussing this at home the other day and speaking to my boys, and I said, oh, what's something interesting about me that not many people know? And they came up with all sorts of things. And in the end, they came up with an embarrassing story, which, you know, after the pool incident, I'm going to get a reputation. But I actually knocked myself out during a PE lesson once. And the worst bit of it was I was the teacher. I was trying to teach some 7-year-olds how to catch a ball. And I said, you know, the most important thing is you keep the eye on the ball all the time. And, you know, and you're watching it. And I went back and back and back, slipped on a hoop and knocked myself out. And I came round to all these 7-year-olds looking at me going, is she dead? Is she dead?
Oh, my God. So you're a PE teacher, is it?
I was a primary school teacher, so I taught everything. Jack of all trades. But this was in a PE lesson.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. So how long did you do that for?
So I was teaching for, 16 years.
Okay.
Before I came into local government.
So what made you switch?
I've always had an interest in the sector. I've always had an interest in politics. I actually studied politics at university and just sort of fell into teaching. It wasn't really the end goal. And our local council here actually advertised, local to where I live, advertised for a clerk. And I thought, well, I quite fancy that. I'm sure I've got the skills, transferable skills that we always talk about. And the rest is history, as they say. And I sort of hopped about a couple of councils and then ended up at Nauk.
So you went straight from uni to teaching.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Well, I had a
All
bit of time sort of doing the usual student thing, temping, and I did all sorts of weird and wonderful jobs. And then went back and did a PGCE. So,
right. Awesome. Yeah, it's a big move switching from teaching to a clerk. But yeah, exactly. There are transferable skills there. Awesome. Lance, what about you? Come on.
Some people do know this because, as part of my tour around the country, I've sort of been telling people about one of my little stories, and I call it my journey. And it was when I cycled across England. I cycled over 800 miles in 9 days, from Somerset to Northumberland via Suffolk and various other places, raising money for charity. And it was to commemorate the 800th anniversary of Magna Carta. And so I was visiting all of the places that the barons who forced the king to agree the charter had come from. And one of those was Trowbridge, which is where I was clerk. I was clerk at Trowbridge for 20 years in total. So I took up that challenge, and yeah, so it was a fantastic thing to do. I thoroughly enjoyed all of it, I think I could say.
That I'd love to do something like that. Yeah, just taking time out and, I guess kind of don't think about anything next mile ahead. That's all you're thinking about.
Where are you heading tonight? Where are you going to eat something next? Because when you're doing that sort of cycle, you need to eat. I was eating sort of 5 meals a day at least, and that wasn't enough to sort of keep the body. So I did lose quite a lot of weight over a week, which wasn't a bad thing as well in some respects. But the one thing I do tell people, having done that, is there is an awful lot of land still that you could build houses on in this country. So my conclusion to that is probably that we build houses in the wrong places. But there we are.
Yeah. Do you have any moments where you thought you weren't going to complete it, or it was
No,
all pretty smooth?
not at all. The worst day was the flattest day across East Anglia, Suffolk and Cambridgeshire,
Oh yeah.
because when it's flat, you don't get any relief from pedalling at all.
Yeah, and the
So
wind factor, if there's wind
yeah,
factor as
yeah,
well.
there was a strong northerly wind that day as well, which was to my side because I was heading west. Yeah, that was a tough day.
Normally, when people complete something like that, they're thinking, right, what next? Are you thinking of a bigger challenge?
Well, I've got to find the time to do that sort of thing, haven't I? So yeah, there's one or two ideas in the back of my mind. Yes, I did cycle London to Paris as well in aid of charity a few years ago, but that was slightly different because that
That's
was with
shorter.
120 other people
Oh,
for
yes.
myeloma. But you're escorted through France with motorcycle outriders and escort cars, including cycling through red lights in Paris. So that was good.
Easy. Cool. And so you've been in the sector. So you mentioned 20 years of clock. So have you been like in the sector from the beginning? Did you go to uni?
That's the only job I've done in local government. But I was a councillor when I became a clerk. So I was a councillor in Gloucestershire and a clerk in Wiltshire. And I did 24 years as a councillor in total. So there was a few years when I did both. But I first became a councillor in my 20s, when I was 25. But I worked in the logistics industry as a project manager
Before.
before I
Okay.
became a clerk.
Cool. Awesome. Okay. So we're going to jump into the webinar in a second. The waiting room is building up. So, on this topic we're talking about today, what is one common mistake or misconception people, have, would you say? Because you've been touring around, you get questions. What are they? So, I'm going to go back to you, Claire.
I think there's one of the biggest things that I see or I hear of from auditors is that people don't give enough information. So when they put their agar forms in, they don't explain variances, or they don't explain them enough. And that's something that the new digital agar system will address, because you won't, as Lance will show us later, you won't be able to move on unless you explain your variances. So that's something that I'm really keen to see.
Cool. Lance?
I get the impression that people expect an online submission, an e-submission, to be quite complicated. And I think the response I get from people when they go through the presentation of the new system is that it's actually quite simple, quite easy. And we've tested it with a number of people this year. And generally, the response has been that the system is pretty good and sort of leads you through. Yeah, there's been a generally positive response.
Good morning, everyone. Grab a cold drink and try and stay cool out there. This recent summer heatwave has been absolutely relentless. And if your council offices are anything like mine, they currently feel more like a greenhouse than a headquarters. Let's get you updated with the coolest news in the sector. Firstly, registration is officially open for Scribefest 2026, the free online conference for town, parish, and community councils. Mark your calendars for Thursday, the 17th of September, and register now at scribe-fest.com. We're excited to announce our 2026 keynote speaker, Jane Biscombe, Town Clerk at Weymouth Town Council. She'll be opening the event with her session, The Things We Count and the Things That Count, lessons from Tumbledown Community Farm in an age of KPIs, metrics, and growth. In a sector where reporting, targets, and compliance are part of everyday life, Jane will explore how we can balance the things we measure with the things that truly matter to our communities. But that's just the beginning, and we'll be revealing the 18 expert speakers ready to share their knowledge and insights with you at Scribefest over the coming weeks and months. Don't miss out, register for free today. Now, let's look at the headlines hitting the desks this week. Our big story today centres on a coordinated push to fundamentally modernise how our sector functions. On the 3rd of July, NALC officially launched a full-scale review of its model standing orders. This lands right alongside the SLCC's brand new 2026 strategy, unveiled on the 30th of June, which places its entire focus on building a resilient profession, defining clearer role expectations, and actively tackling workload and workplace pressures. So what this means for you, if your council's internal rulebook feels clunky or completely disconnected from model council life, this is your golden window. The sector is opening its doors to let you help shape the templates that govern your meetings and agendas for years to come. Look out for consultation links through your local county associations to feed your real-world insights directly back to the top. In sector headlines, a major call to action was issued on the 6th of July with the launch of a vital new national sector survey. NALC is strongly urging every single parish and town council to complete this. This isn't just another box-ticking exercise. This data is going directly to central government to build an undeniable, evidence-based picture of our sector's capacity and financial pressures. If you want the government to understand your workload, take 10 minutes and fill this out. Next, a monumental win for personal safety. As of the 29th of June 2026, local authorities are no longer legally required to publish councillors' home addresses online. This eliminates a massive security headache, and clerks can now safely redact and pull personal addresses from public-facing registers. Take 5 minutes this week to check your website layout and protect your members' privacy. Turning our focus to Wales now, a huge congratulations to all the teams who celebrated community-led triumphs at the One Voice Wales National Showcase and Awards Ceremony on the 3rd of July at the Royal Welsh Showground. Additionally, if you're managing a smaller tier budget, the £500 startup grants are officially open as of the 18th of June 2026. So what this means for you, if you have a small-scale community pilot, a minor digital upgrade, or a public engagement project that just needs a small financial nudge to get off the ground, this is free, dedicated funding. Head over to the One Voice Wales portal and get your applications in before the allocation closes. So that is your morning news desk briefing. Stay hydrated, look after yourselves in this heat, and make sure to reserve your spot for Scribefest 2026.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Paige. Yes, show the love there.
Where I'm going to start with my presentation about the new AGAR online portal, which is being introduced by SAAA for you for submission of your AGAR. Which will be available for everyone from next year. So hopefully, fairly recently, you have completed your 2025-26 AGAR. Hopefully, most of you got those in by the 30th of June. I do know that there are one or two people on the meeting today who have been participating in our trial for the AGAR submissions this year, so they completed their 25-26 AGARs using the system earlier in June, May and June. So we have trialled this system, and we received 78 submissions overall through the system from people participating in the trial. So thank you very much to those of you who did participate in the trial and got your AGAR submitted using the system this year. But this system will be available for everyone from next spring for you to submit your 26-27 AGAR. So what I'm going to do is demonstrate the system to you. The version of the system that I'm using is the test system, user acceptance testing system. So in the top of the screen, in the address there, you'll see uat-agar.saaa.co.uk. So it's a slightly different version of the system to the one that will go live for everybody next year. The UAT-bit will disappear for the live system, but agar.saaa.co.uk is the web address that everybody will be directed to submit agars. The system next year won't be compulsory for everybody, but there will be an incentive for those of you who use the online system to submit your agar. So where we are at the moment is the login page, and you will, as you would normally with any sort of website of this nature, enter an email address and password. The email address is the one that should be registered with your external auditor for submission of the agar that you've recently submitted. So if you do change your council email address or the email address that you use for council business, then please make sure you inform everybody who needs to know that the email address has changed. If you don't change the email address for us, then there is still this request access button at the bottom of the login page that you can see there, where we can then set you up using your different email once we go live to you. You will either be sent a password to be able to log into the system, which you will enter here. Or if not, or if you've lost that, then again, there's a forgotten password link that you can use towards the bottom as well. So everything should be fairly simple in terms of being able to sign into the system to start. Now, the system should be made available for everybody in the autumn this year, so you can do a bit of a test. You can get familiar with the system. You can make sure that the password is working correctly and the email is set up correctly. And hopefully in the autumn, when you go into the system and try the system, any figures that you enter in the accounting statements for 25, 26, which you need for comparison purposes for next year, will be saved in the system so that you don't have to enter those figures again, obviously assuming that you don't need to restate any of those figures when you get to the end of the year. So the first question you will get is a preliminary question. And this is the question that divides us into councils that are below the 25,000 threshold on income and expenditure, and those that are above the 25,000 threshold. So these are not questions that will form part of the final agar printout. This is just a routing question to know which questions, further questions we then have to ask you. I am going to show you a couple of entries. And so I'm going to go for a below 25,000 entry here. So this example is 24,000 in both of those boxes. And I'm going to show you this so you can see the further questions that are asked then on those routing questions. If you are below 25,000 turnover, then you do get some further questions. So to be able to qualify for certificate of exemption, if you are below 25,000, then you need to be at least 3 years old and have submitted 3 years worth of agars previously. So if you're a new council, then you won't be able to answer yes to these, but we are going to make the assumption that you are, and we'll click next, having clicked yes in each of those. And then you also need to answer some quasi-legal questions. So if there's been a public interest report, you still need to answer all of the questions and submit a full agar for review. So we assume that there has been no public interest report here, and there has been no judicial review proceedings, and there's been no unlawful court declaration. And you will then choose, having answered those questions, we presume, to go for a certificate of exemption for your council. So we would click yes there if that was the case. Now, under the current system, there is a logical order in which we complete the statements. We are going to enhance the system for next year, having learnt from the trial that we've undertaken this year. So in future years, you will be able to choose which section you decide you want to complete first, whether you want to complete the annual governance statement or the accounting statements. And in most cases, you would choose to do the accounting statements first, because that has to be completed prior to the meeting of the council at which it's approved, and it needs to be signed by the RFO prior to presentation at that meeting. Whereas your annual governance statement, you would take a blank form to the meeting for councillors to determine what the answer to each statement should be before completing the statement itself, which you can then come back to the system and do. And I'll just touch on that a bit later after we've gone through and shown you what we produce as part of the system, and talk about how you get the person who's chaired the meeting to sign the various documents. But with the current system, we have to complete the annual governance statement first. As I said, there will be an enhancement to the system so that you can do it in the order that you want to do it. The system will show you what the variance is in pounds, and it will show you what the variance is as a percentage, and it will come up with a box in either yellow or green. If the variance is over 15%, for a below 25,000 council, you're not going to get a variance over 100,000. But if the variance is over 15%, then you get the yellow warning box and you need to provide the explanation. So you may have prepared an explanation spreadsheet in advance prior to doing this, but you don't necessarily need to do that. But it might be good if you did, so you've got a record of all the things that you put in the system in one place. So to do that, to provide the explanation, we're going to add a new item. And there, in this case, we are required to provide a figure or more than one figure, because you can add more than one item if there are more than one explanation, and you can remove any that you've added by mistake. So you need to provide a figure, which should be something around about £55, which is the amount of the variance. So we will put the full £55 in there, and we will put. Now, the advice to anybody would be to provide as full and a comprehensive explanation as possible. I'm only putting a few words in there to get us to the next stage, but this text box does expand if you need to provide lots more text to provide the full explanation. But at that point, I'm going to recalculate the variance, and you'll see the figure here has gone to zero, as we've explained the full £55, and the percentage has gone to zero as well, because we've provided a full explanation of the quantity required. And you'll see that the box here has changed to a green box and it says success rather than warning.
So, yeah, just really quickly. So, for next year, there's been a change in the practitioner's guide. So, this number 11 here, do the figures in the accounting statements above exclude? It will be include next year. So, just keep your eye out for that. So, it will ask you to confirm that the whether or not the accounting statements include any trust transactions. So, it's the opposite way around next year. So, just be aware of that when you come to do your next AGAR.
And like any good examination, the answers in the question, because the guidance notes on the right-hand side there say, if you are not a trustee, you should answer yes. Of course, the guidance notes next year will change to say that if you are not a trustee, you should answer no to that question next year, because it will be include rather than exclude. Okay. And so you get the certificate of exemption there, which can be signed by the RFO and signed by the chair of the meeting. And dated and record minute recorded as well for the meeting. And then, like all authorities, you get the annual governance statement, which is the same for everybody, and you get the accounting statements. Again, that's the one that's got to be signed by the RFO in advance. And those are the ones that need to be printed off and completed and taken to the meeting for approval. Or if you've completed the annual governance statement following the meeting, you need to make sure that the person who chaired the meeting is available to sign that after it's been completed. So you don't need to have a second meeting to approve it. It's been approved at the meeting where it's been discussed and confirmed. But after the meeting, once you've completed that section, you would need to arrange for the chair of the meeting to sign it. So that's the documents. Again, you'll see, as before, it's over 15% this time, but it's actually also over 100,000. So even if it wasn't over 15%, it will be over the 100,000 level as well. So we've got the warning we're required to provide an explanation. This is where I give you some guidance as to how much of an explanation in pounds you need to provide. So the variance is just over 100,000. But I'm only going to provide an explanation for exactly £100,000. Okay. And this is just remind me of the receipts. So I'm going to put, okay. So we haven't provided an explanation for the other £828. We recalculate the variance. We get the green box. The variance, there is still a small variance, but the variance is well below 15%. Once you've got the green box, you can click next and go on. You do not need to provide an explanation for the other £828. Some of you may have been required to or asked to by your external auditor in the past to provide an explanation for every pound. You don't need to. Your external auditors now know that they don't need to ask you to do that. All you have to, and all you'll be required to do, is provide an explanation for below the 15% level. Okay. So providing an explanation which adds up to 100,000 when the variance is 100,828 is more than satisfactory. Now, what I would say is if this figure starts at 15.5% and you provide an explanation for a small amount of the variance to bring it below the 15% level, that's probably not quite within the sort of expectations. So if you're just above 15%, then you still need to provide an explanation for the majority of the variance. But what you don't need to go do is go scrabbling around to add a few more pounds and a few more pounds to get to the total. Provided an explanation for a small amount of the variance, we do get the green box because our variance is below 15%. But whilst you could click next at that stage, our guidance is that you should provide more of an explanation there because you haven't provided an explanation for the majority of the variance. Okay, so we're going to add a new item there and we're going to provide another explanation for another 42,000. And we can say that that was okay. And we recalculate there. And now our variance is down to a reasonable amount. We still haven't explained the final £602. I've shown you can add more than one item as well. And that is now satisfactory because we've explained the majority. And as I said at the beginning, the enhancement we'll make to the system next year is that you can do these separately. And you can do the accounting statements to take to the meeting in advance. And you can do the governance statement after the meeting. And once they're signed documents and completed with the dates and the minute references, you will then need to upload those back into the system. After you've signed them, so you get the post signature questions. Do you need to make any changes? We will say no. Has your agar been signed? Yes, and you then need to upload the document from a file. We're going to choose a file. There we are. And if you want to, if it's on more than one page, so if you've got your accounting statements and your annual governance statement and possibly your certificate of exemption all on separate pages. You photograph them, or your scanner only does it as individual pages. You can add those as separate items and click next. And then you need to provide the system with information about what's been written on the agar in pen. Public rights notice for next year, we're hoping that the public rights notice will be produced by the system once you've chosen an appropriate date. But for this version, for this year, it wasn't. So again, we need to add a file there, and we need to provide the dates of the public rights notice. I think there's a an update to be done here to remove that text box if these dates are correct. But as I say, the public rights notice hopefully will be changed for next year so that it produces it itself. And then it might seem a bit strange, but the last question, which is this question here, is to upload the internal audit report that's been done in the normal way by your internal auditor. And we will provide some additional guidance at the front just to explain to people that that's where that needs to be added because it wasn't necessarily obvious under the current system. So that's it. That's everything. You've completed your agar. You are re ready to press the submit button. But that's not the end of it. So once you've submitted, that's when the external auditor will receive the information and be able to conduct the external audit, unless you're a certificate of exemption counsel, in which case all they will get and want to have a look at is the certificate of exemption because they won't do any further review. So we'll click submit at that point. This is the point at which you think you've done everything, but there's one other thing that you can do, which hopefully you will do, which is to download a version of the agar to put on your website. So that version, if I click there, which is that document there, it's easier to show you, is the version that shows you the date on which it was approved there, shows you the minute reference that we put into the system there, and this is why we put that information into the system. But it's redacted the signatures. So this is an accessible version which you can add to your website that doesn't have any of the security issues around providing signatures on scanned documents. And it's got the web address on there. And the same for the accounting statements. It's got the signatures redacted, but it's got the dates and the minute references on there. So that is the end of my demonstration.
And also, it's really good having these well-known leads, Lance and Claire, both making themselves available, both digitally and physically. So it's a big change, which will be ha happening to the industry. But it's great to show things early and get that feedback. So over to you, Claire.
Hello,
Yeah,
super.
over to you.
Sorry. Okay, so my name's Claire Reed. I am the project manager for the Proper Practices project. And these are proper practices. It says on here for smaller authorities, but actually, when we talk about it now, we talk about category two authorities. And that's basically authorities with an income or expenditure, whichever is highest, of £15 million or less. And I work closely with the Smaller Authorities Proper Practices Panel, or SAP, much easier to say. So hopefully everyone's familiar with the practitioner's guide. That's the latest guide that came out just over 12 months ago. It's been updated to reflect the change in the legislation. So as I say, it's for smaller authorities or category two authorities with income and expenditure of up to £15 million. Supports the completion of the AGAR form, and it's produced by SAP, Small Authorities Proper Practice Panel. And it's free to access, and I'll pop a link to the guide in the chat once I've finished, so that if you haven't yet had a chance to look at this year's guide, then you'll be able to access that. There's currently re oops, sorry, excuse me. Got a bit quick. There's currently a review of proper practices taking place. So the proper practices were originally published, these proper practices as we have today, in 2002, and that was when the regime was changed over to the limited assurance review. The proper practices and the practitioner's guide are updated annually. So the panel receive feedback from practitioners, from internal and external auditors, and they go through that feedback and they look and assess whether or not any changes or updates are needed. Obviously, that then makes the document quite difficult to read in places because I taught English in a previous life. I find it doesn't hang together very well. There's a lot of detail in some areas, not so much detail in other areas. And it does feel very much like it's been written by committee. So that's another reason for this overhaul, this change and rewrite. There are still too many avoidable errors in AGAR submissions. These are the minor errors that are given you other matters or qualifications that actually, are quite straightforward if the information, if the information is understood. So last year, SAP decided that this rewrite was going to be done, and CIPFA, that's the Chartered Institute of Public Finance Accountants, were commissioned to write the new proper practices and a new guide. So going forward, there will be two separate documents. One will be the proper practices, so that will be your mandatory requirements, and then there will be a guide to support you in completing the AGAR and managing your accounts and your governance in line with proper practices. There was consultation at the end of last year, last autumn, on the problems, if you like, the issues with the current proper practices and the current practitioner's guide. And that feedback fed into what has now been produced. And I just wanted to share with you just a four sort of or five key points that came out of the consultation and what's happened since. So we've got a you said, we did. So some of the feedback on the consultation was that the guide was too long and it was overwhelming. So the guide's been simplified and shortened. There's reduction in repetition. Jargon has gone. It's much more clear. The guidance is much clearer, and it's in plain English. There's also a glossary now. So as you go through, if there's a word, a quorum springs to mind, there'll be a hyperlink. You can click on the word. It'll take you to the glossary and it'll tell you exactly what it means by that. There was also feedback that the guidance wasn't tailored to different authority types. So again, in the new guidance, it will signpost you when the requirements are different. So perhaps that's for an authority over 200 or a parish meeting, for example. It will highlight those differences. Talking of parish meetings, there will be a separate appendix. So if anybody here also looks after a parish meeting, there will be a separate appendix with the requirements for parish meetings. So it's much easier to find what needs to happen. People said that the guide felt like it was audit focused, so the new proper practices have been written to support practical understanding and application. So it's not just about the audit, as I said earlier, it's about enabling you to run your council as per proper practices for your accounts and also for governance. So there's much more emphasis on how things should be done properly rather than this is what you need to do for the year end. And finally, roles and responsibilities are unclear. So the roles of clerks, RFOs, members, auditors, etc., are much clearer in the new guidance. So everybody's aware of what their roles and responsibilities are. So changes for 27, 28. So I'll talk quickly about the annual governance statement, and then I'll talk about accounts. The main change. So a lot of the oops, sorry, a lot of the assertions on the annual governance statement are staying the same. However, the order is changing. So you will still have the same assertions, but in a different order. So it's a more logical flow because at the moment you've got some referring to accounts at the beginning, you've got some at the end. They'll be together. And in the most part, the wording is staying the same. However, assertion six, this was the assertion about audit previously, is been renamed governance. And so the key changes there are around audit findings. And you can see on the screen there. So there will now be a requirement that all audit reports, so that's internal and external reports, are reviewed in an open public meeting and are published on the authority's website. Any matters that are raised by internal or external auditors, sorry, the authority will have to produce an action plan to show how it is going to address those findings. And that also needs to be discussed in a public meeting and published on the authority's website. And there needs to be evidence that that action plan is being monitored and that progress on that plan is reported. So that could be as simple as a minute in, within the minutes from the council meeting, showing that on the meeting in let's say July, because we're in July, that the action plan was reviewed by the authority. It was noted that the requirement for, I don't know, the generic email address, that the clerk had agreed that with the supplier, and that the new gov.uk domain will be up and running in the next 2 months, for example. That goes in a minute. That shows that the action plan has been monitored and progress has been reported. So it's as simple as that. And then finally, there is a new code of practice for internal audit in Category 2 authorities. There is a requirement in law that there is a code of practice for internal audit, but until now, until the review, one that was relevant to Category 2 authorities didn't exist. So as part of this process of reviewing the proper practices, SITFA have written a code of practice for internal audit. And I know on the call today, we've got some members of the Internal Audit Forum. They have really helped with that and input into that, looking at sort of how it works in practice. It shouldn't be, if you have an internal auditor that you need, sorry, that you use, so that's somebody that's independent of the authority, somebody that is experienced in auditing both your governance and your accounts, you shouldn't have anything to worry about. This is aimed at those authorities that perhaps use somebody from the local area who gets paid with a bottle of wine or an M&S voucher to have a quick glance at the accounts and sign it off. That's no longer acceptable. At the end of the day, these Category 2 authorities, they are public authorities and they do have and use public funds. So it needs to be a robust internal audit, and that is what this is for. I just want to whiz on to accounts now. What we know is the accounting statements. They are going to be renamed in the new proper practices as a statement of accounts, and that's to reflect what it is referred to in the legislation. And what I've done here is I've used the format of Lance's digital portal. It's your portal now, Lance. I've decided, and I've created a mock-up of what the statement accounts will look like under the new proper practices. Now, please don't worry about the central bit where you've got debtors and creditors. That is only applicable to authorities on an income and an expenditure basis. So I've done that, this imagining that this authority is over 200,000 on income or expenditure. So just quickly, you can see there at point three, borrowing. So borrowing is now going to be part of the first part of the statement of accounts. So whereas before it was classed as another receipt, it's now been separated out. And you'll also note that at four, staff costs have gone. So there will no longer be a requirement to report staff costs separately. Staff costs will fall into total other payments and expenditure, which I've highlighted there at number six. That was because there's quite a bit of feedback, particularly from very small authorities where there's only one member of staff. And in reality, when you put the staff cost down, you're basically telling everybody how much you get paid. And for the purposes of sort of privacy, it was decided that that wasn't necessary. And so that will be part of all of the payments. And somebody said to me recently, that makes it less transparent. I would disagree because, you know, you're publishing details of your accounts anyway and your payments each month or each quarter, depending on if you're under the transparency code or not. So that information is there if people want to look for it. But what it isn't doing now is being stuck on your notice board or stuck on the front page of your website so everybody can see. If somebody wants to find it, they can. As I said, so whereas at the moment you produce a reconciliation between box 7 and 8, and obviously that's, again, I'm talking to those of you on income and expenditure, instead of producing a separate sheet that you submit, you actually now will put that information straight on the front of the AGOR form. You can see it there. Debtors, prepayments and stock at number 9, and then at 10, creditors, receipts and advance and accruals. So that's only applicable to income and expenditure. And then at the bottom, and this is for everybody, you will now be asked to split out your reserves on the front of the AGOR. So you will give information about earmarked reserves and general reserves. The reason for this is that some councils are sat on quite a lot of money, perhaps a SIL payment, and they are raising the precept to cover costs, as you would expect. But sometimes residents are quite upset by that because they can see that the council sat on a lot of money in reserves. What they don't necessarily realise is they are earmarked or they are ring fenced, and actually they're not part of your general reserve. So this is to split it out and make it a little bit easier for people to understand. And then finally, next steps. Been a bit of a whistle stop tour, sorry, we've been very quick. There's another consultation running in August and September this year, so the panel will be publishing the proper practices in full and inviting comments from the sector. So that's members, clerks, RFOs, auditors, everybody is welcome to have their say. And then the new proper practices and the new guide to proper practices will be available in early 2027. And they will be applicable to the 27-28 financial year. So therefore, when you come to complete your AGAR in sort of April, May 2028, you will have those extra boxes and that extra information that you're being asked to submit. I just put on there about the local audit office, only because the panel are working closely with MHCLG around the local audit office. The audit office is supposed to be launching later this year with a new prime minister coming in next week. Who knows if that's still going to go ahead? But just to say, you know, SAT are working with SAAA alongside MHCLG around sort of, you know, the formation of the local audit office, what it's going to cover. At the moment, I think they're going to be very much focused on principal authority. So I don't think they really have much to do with us initially, but in time, I think, you know, they will take over smaller authority or category 2 authority audit responsibility. So that's it from me. I'm sorry, it was very quick.
No, can I ask a question? So there, some people have already been asking in the chat. We would love to make it easier for our customers using Scribe accounts to integrate, you know, to publish their numbers into the digital AGAR. Will it be possible in the future for software providers such as ourselves to integrate into to the portal?
At some point in the future, yes, but we haven't yet got a timescale for doing that. What we want to do is de-risk the introduction of this system. And the first element of that is only to have one email address for each authority to be able to sign into the system. There will be further enhancements then to allow us to go to electronic signatures for the chair of the meeting and to go to internal auditors signing in to be able to do their section. And one of those enhancements at some point in the future will be to allow software providers to provide links in so that information can be populated directly.
Awesome. So similar to Making Tax Digital.
And we'll be in touch with you and your competitors at some point in the future.
Not competitors, friends. Cool. Okay, awesome. We're ready and waiting. Excellent. Thank you very much, Lance and Claire. That was a big event. Lots of good questions there. We could have gone on perhaps all day, but we had to cut it short. So Stepping back a little bit, what is one takeaway you want people to think about from the whole session? I'm going to go to you last.
Just the, there's an opportunity here for people to simplify the way that we submit and retain the information about their annual accounts. And there's even more opportunities for people to learn about it and to study it and actually use the system prior to having to submit their accounts next year. And if they do so, benefit from the incentive payment, the cashback opportunity.
Yes, a bit of dosh to incentivize. Claire?
So I'd say keep your eye out for the consultation, and respond. Look at the new proper practices and tell us what you think.
Share your opinion. So also,
Absolutely.
let's go back and learn a bit more about yourself. You both talked about your start in your career. Lance, you starting in logistics. Claire, your teacher. If you could go back to your 18-year-old self and give them a little bit of advice through their life, what would that be? But also tell us a little bit about that person when they're 18. So go to you, Lance.
When I was 18, I was just heading off to university, leaving home. Never went back, as it were, really. I don't think there is really anything I need to give myself as any advice. Life's been pretty good, yeah. So I'm quite happy and like yeah. It's there've been some ups and downs, of course, but yeah, no problem at all.
Good, yeah, so keep on going. That's your advice. You're on the right track, got the right attitude.
And
Awesome.
so early retirement. I always wanted to retire early. So yeah, it's not bad if you can retire when you get 60.
Perfect, Claire.
I'm a bit like Lance, really. I mean, at 18, I was on my way off to university, the same. I think if I was to give my 18-year-old self some advice, I'd say be confident. And it will work out. Just you can be, or you can do anything that you want to do. So keep at it. If you work hard, you'll get it. You'll get there, I think, is
You've
what
done
I would
it.
say.
Awesome. Cool. So we've got the previous questions from the previous guest. This is a double whammy today because we've got two guests. So the question from Alex, we're going to go to you, Claire. Alex, from CEO of Little Green Button. He asked a great question. I love this one. Can you name a place, an activity, or a person that makes you feel really safe and grounded? Something where you can switch off from the rest of the world when things get hectic? That's a great question. I love that one.
I was thinking about this and I was racking my brains and I thought, oh, and then it came to me and I thought, home. I've always said that home is my oasis. It's the place that I go, it's where my family are. I have three sons, so they're normally in and out. There's always plenty of food, there's always chat, and I feel safe here and comfortable here. So if I've had a really rotten day, there's always somebody on about, I don't know, some football match or some video they've seen online or something, completely different that just grounds you and you think, oh yeah, life's not so bad because, that was a funny video or that was a great football match or, my whole world revolves around football, having three sons. So yeah,
Yes.
it does. Being at home, I think, I like to travel, but I do like to come home.
Honestly, I thought you were going to say in a swimming pool after a bad
Well, the swimming pool's here. Oh, it makes me sound really posh. It's not an actual pool. It's one of these metal frame ones we put up in the summer. I don't know whether that makes it better or worse.
I get it. And you're asking the next question that happens to be Lance here. So go
Yep.
for it. He's
So
got
I
a
went
couple.
a bit crazy, and I wanted to know if Lance could be any animal at all, what would he be and why?
Well, my answer to that is I've recently been in Canada on a holiday, and while we were there, we saw a number of bald eagles, and I've always fancied flying. I've never been a paraglider or anything like that, but I go walking up in the mountains occasionally, and if I'm up there, I do sometimes get that sense I just want to sort of leap off the edge and spread my arms, as it were. So if I was an eagle, I could do that without sort of falling to the ground too drastically. And they always seem to live in wonderful parts of the world, don't they? So yeah, that's what I'd be if I could be a different animal.
Lovely, lovely. And what question do you have for the next guest, Lance?
My question is, well, we're going to have a new prime minister by this time next week, I believe, aren't we? So my question is, what's the first change you would introduce if you were the new prime minister that would make the lives of everyone better?
Great question, hard question there. Definitely going to pre-warn them on that one.
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Really appreciate both of you taking the time to come along and share your knowledge with all these clerks and councillors and everyone around the country. And have a good day.
Thanks, John.